This is the Does God Exist bi-monthly publication for the visually impaired for March-April 2016. John Clayton is your reader. This particular issue of our bi-monthly is on the theme of marriage and the family and evidence of God's design. And on the cover, there's a picture of a young couple in wedding attire. And our lead article is Marriage and the Family as an Evidence of God's Design. In the past several years, we have seen a great deal of confusion in our country about what marriage is, who should be allowed to participate in it. Throughout history, there has been great conflict about what the purpose and nature of marriage is. In some cultures, marriage has been a way of providing for women, and even polygamy has been promoted as a way to provide for more women. In other cultures, marriage has been a mark of ownership. A man marries a woman to mark his territory, and a woman is a possession, and is essentially a servant to the man. In the Western world, marriage has been redefined and is now in Webster's dictionary as, quote, any close union, end of quote. And to marry is, quote, to enter into a close relationship, end of quote. The United States Supreme Court has operated on this definition with a ruling that may make sense to politicians and secularists, but which misses the purpose of marriage as spelled out in the Bible. God's design for human emotional and psychological needs is fulfilled in marriage. It is interesting that in Jesus' day, a couple would not have sexual relationships until long after the marriage was announced. Joseph had not had sexual relationships with Mary, and yet is called her husband, Luke 2 and verse 5 and Matthew 1 beginning with verse 18. In Genesis 2:18, we see God stating, quote, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him a helpmeet for him," end of quote, or as some translations put it, quote, "a helper suitable for him." If I might inject a personal note here, when my wife died after 49 years of marriage, it was not the loss of a sexual partner that afflicted me the most. It was sitting alone at our kitchen table after a day of work and having no one with whom to share my joys and frustrations, and no one to discuss what was going on in my life. Genesis 2:24 tells us, quote, "Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh," end of quote. The word cleave in this verse is debag in Hebrew, meaning to adhere to, and is usually used to describe a relationship to God, such as in Deuteronomy 10:20 and 11:22 and 13:4, and also in Joshua 22:5 and 23:8. I know some people can handle not having that relationship, but for me, God's wisdom in marriage provided for a need I had. It was a need nothing else could fill. God's design for men and women's sexual needs is fulfilled in marriage. For the most part, our culture does not understand sex. Sex has become a commodity and is used to sell things and to assert control. Our society sees sex as an entertainment gimmick and as a release that is used individually for pleasure. Being sexy in our culture is equated with being successful. This view has corrupted sex and brings enormous pain to everyone. The teenager who feels they have to perform sexually to be accepted and successful is in for disillusionment and disappointment. The Ashley Madison website that helps married individuals find partners for extramarital affairs is thriving because of the view of sex as a commodity. In the June 2013 issue of Atlantic Magazine, there was an article by Lisa Mundis titled, quote, "A Gay Guide to Marital Bliss," end of quote. In the article, she told of a survey of gay couples in which 82% of those interviews said that sex outside their relationship was acceptable. All of this is a reflection of our culture's failure to understand what sex is about and how marriage meets the needs of men and women sexually. God has always portrayed marriage as something beautiful and as a covenant. Procreation has been a part of that covenant, and the process has been described as a thing of beauty and purpose. In Genesis 1, verse 28, sex was commanded as Adam and Eve were told to be fruitful and fill the earth. Sex was beautiful and purposeful because sin had not yet entered the picture. The writer of Proverbs 5, verses 17 through 23, describes the beauty of sexual commitment by saying, quote, "Let them be yours and yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth, a loving doe, a graceful deer. May her breast satisfy you always. May you be captivated by her love. Why be captivated by an adulteress? Why embrace the bosom of another man's wife? The evil deeds of a wicked man ensnare him. The cords of his sin hold him fast. He will die for lack of discipline, led astray by his own great folly. End of quote. That's verses 17 through 23. Every study by scientists from Masters and Johnson down to the present day has shown that the best of sex is found in a singular committed relationship. In the Corinthian letter, Paul writes to Christians who live in a sexually charged culture where prostitution was open, rampant, and encouraged. Paul tells these Christians to marry because, quote, it is better to marry than to burn with passion, end of quote, 1 Corinthians 7:9. Earlier in verses 2 through 5, Paul tells couples to meet one each other's sexual needs by not depriving each other, so that, quote, Satan cannot tempt you because of your incontinency, end of quote. God's design for marriage provides role models for children. Our society has seen a great erosion of role models for children to learn from and to emulate. In my 41 years of teaching in the public schools, one of the great joys of my teaching experience was having young people cling to me as a role model. It doesn't mean I was a perfect example of what a man should be. It certainly doesn't mean that I had a macho image to project, or that I was an example of how a man should dress. These kids came from families where there was no man in the home. When I would make a joke about an activity dominated by men or talk about doing something that attracts men, they were on the edge of their seats, wanting to know more. I taught across the hall from a lady who taught a class on what was called home management, home economics in the 1960s. Kids from single-parent families were always hanging around her room, asking questions, including a lot of questions about how to, quote, look like a wife or mother. Between America's divorce rate, single parents who were never married, and the gay community, there are many children who cry out for role models that they have never seen. When you read the Bible, you see men having a significant role in raising children. Look at Ephesians 6:4 and Colossians 3:21. It is difficult to read Proverbs 31, verses 10 through 31, and not see God's plan for roles being held out as the ideal. It describes the effect of the ideal wife and mother on her husband and family. This need of children can be partially met by grandparents and dedicated Christian leaders, but nothing can replace the ideal plan that God has given for the home. Not only do these biblical teachings show us what is best for children, but there is also the effect of these ideal roles on adults. When we read Ephesians 5:22 through 33, we see the wisdom of teaching men and women to respect and submit to one another, to love one another as they love themselves, and to have the oneness that God calls us to in Genesis 3:24. People have tried about every alternative there is to God's way. Polygamy, polyandry, group marriage, harems, promiscuity, prostitution, free love, same-sex marriage, and monasticism have all fallen short. Now we have redefined marriage with a commodity view being the core of our beliefs, and all of these systems are being tried again. It has failed in the past, and it will fail again. God's way works. But it seems that people have to try everything and learn the hard way that what God says is true. We shouldn't have to put our finger into the fire to know it is hot. Why did God create marriage and family? By Roland Ernst. In Genesis 2:18, God said it was not good for man to be alone. He then created a mate suitable for the man and brought her to him and performed the first marriage. God had already taught man about the birds and the bees by showing him the birds and the bees and the goats and the camels and the rest of the animals. Adam had the opportunity to see the pairings as he gave the animals names. I think Adam was smart enough to catch on to the fact that the animals were in pairs, but he was one of a kind. So God gave Adam the missing part of his life by taking Eve from Adam's body. They were the matched pair, but a complementary pair. They complemented each other in more than just physical characteristics. Any married person can recognize that men and women are different in their attitudes, their desires, and in the way they see things. Sometimes both men and women become frustrated with these differences. But we are wise to thank God for the differences. The differences make life much more interesting as men and women complete each other in every way. I would like for you to think a little deeper about marriage and family and what God had in mind when He created us. Did God want to teach us something by giving us marriage and family? Remember that there are many things that we cannot fully comprehend. We don't understand a God outside of time and space, since we are limited by those barriers. The Bible tells us that God is a spirit, John 4:24, and that we can only understand persons who have physical bodies. To help us understand and relate to God, he took the form of a man in Jesus Christ. Jesus not only came to redeem us, but to show us what God is like. When we realize the vastness of the universe, we wonder how a God who created and controls all of this could care about us. The Bible refers to God as our Father, a perfect Father. Psalm 68:5, Psalms 103:13, Proverbs 3:12, Isaiah 9:6, Isaiah 63:16, Isaiah 64:8, Matthew 5:16, verses 45 and 48 as well. We can begin to get an understanding of a father's love and care for his children when we have fathers who care for us, or we become fathers ourselves. God is even described in mothering terms, Psalms 91:4. If we did not become mothers or fathers, we would be hard-pressed to understand this relationship. Perhaps God created parenting to give us a clear physical object lesson. We can now say, I get it. We can understand God as father or parent only because we understand that concept in our own lives. When I read the book of Revelation, I see how John struggles with describing heaven. He uses terms like gold and rubies and emeralds. John runs the gamut of precious and beautiful things we have here on the earth, but I'm sure that heaven is much more than gold and jewels. John can only describe what he sees with words that he and readers will understand. The real thing must surely be much more precious, amazing, and beautiful than words can describe. The same goes for descriptions of hell using fire and brimstone and worms. Do these things literally describe hell? No. I believe it is much worse than human words can describe, but the words we understand are all we have to use. Getting back to marriage, did God have something more in mind when he gave us marriage and family? Did he know we could never comprehend our relationship with him unless we had something we could physically perceive? I think that God gave us marriage so that we could grasp the relationship he wants to have with us. At Mount Sinai, God performed a marriage with his people, his bride that he had rescued from Egypt. A covenant of marriage was sealed with two tablets of stone. Amazingly, the bride was unfaithful at the marriage ceremony, but God forgave and gave her another chance. In fact, he gave many more chances as the bride failed to be faithful. God kept calling her back. He even used the prophet Hosea to illustrate this relationship. He told Hosea to marry a prostitute, Hosea 1:2. Hosea brought Gomer out of the street life and made her his wife, only to experience the pain of her going back to the streets and Hosea buying her again. By reading the story of Hosea and Gomer, we can feel the pain of this unfaithfulness in a way that we could not comprehend otherwise. We can feel God's pain at our unfaithfulness. We can finally understand what God meant when he told Moses on Mount Sinai, quote, I am a jealous God. You shall have no other gods before me, end of quote, Exodus 20, verses 3 through 5. Without the object lesson of marriage, I don't think we could ever really understand how God feels. Then we come to the New Testament. We find the marriage illustration used again to describe the church as the bride of Christ. Marital love and faithfulness make it possible for us to understand that word picture. The pain of unfaithfulness and divorce allow us to realize the importance and meaning of what God is saying. God gave us a beautiful gift in marriage, family, and parenthood. But did God have more in mind? Did he give marriage and fatherhood as the dynamic lesson so that our feeble minds could see something greater? Maybe we can't fully understand what heaven is like, and we can't fully understand what God is like. We don't have the words to adequately describe either, but we can understand our personal relationship with him as our Father and our corporate relationship with Christ as his bride. We can know those things only because God has given us a physical object lesson. It's an object lesson we live out so we can see and understand a greater truth. Marriage and family are gifts from God to make life meaningful and to give us understanding of spiritual concepts that would otherwise be beyond our grasp. Is that the reason Satan is working so hard to destroy marriage and parenting, especially fatherhood? Yes, I believe that is the reason. Some news items relating to sex, marriage, and love. Money and marriage. An interesting study by Emory University scientists found that couples who spent over $20,000 for their weddings were 3.5 times more likely to end up divorced than couples who spent less than that amount. Men who spent more than $2,000 on a ring were also more likely to be divorced than men who spent less. There are obviously a number of different explanations for this, but the overriding message is that lack of money is not a primary cause of marriages failing. The data is from National Geographic, December 2015. Dating sites and STDs. We are told that 1 in 5 relationships begin online, and thanks to dating websites, that is likely to increase. What we are not told is that sexually transmitted disease rates are rising, and apps like Tinder and Grindr are contributors. In 2014, sexually transmitted diseases in Rhode Island reached a 10-year high, with cases of gonorrhea reaching 30%. A separate study shows that homosexual men who used these sites had a higher rate of gonorrhea and chlamydia than the general population. Dating apps attract a population that can be dangerous. Your chances of finding a soulmate are much better when you meet someone in person at Bible class, and the STD rate is less. The data is from Popular Science, October 2015, page 30. Do animals know where babies come from? That is the title of an article in Scientific American, January 2016, page 67. It should not be surprising that understanding that sex leads to babies does not seem to be comprehended by animals. Instinctive behavior can allow reproduction and can even establish levels of social interaction in animals. Their cognitive skills, however, are not good enough to allow understanding in animals, and the article discusses investigations that have led to evidence of this. One of the things that describes human spiritual nature is our capacity to function independently of instinctive drives. We are not robotically driven by instincts, as most animals are. Art, music, worship, feeling, guilt, being sympathetic, and doing things that may not positively affect survival are all attributes of humans that are not seen in animals. The fact that love in humans can be an agape type of love, rather than just a physical attraction, speaks well of our spiritual capacity. Safer Sex by Dr. Stephen Eckstein, Jr. Sexually transmitted diseases plague America and the world. Society has resorted to a new gimmick to fool the ignorant and destroy the simple. Government and public officials, supported by some from the medical profession, have urged the widespread use of condoms to lessen the spread of these diseases. Well, this is a tacit admission that people are going to engage in promiscuous sexual encounters regardless of the risk involved or the consequences suffered. The real tragedy is that many have already fallen for the deception of Satan, and that many more will be slain by their arch enemies. Here are some points worth considering. First, the assumption that sex relationships outside of the divine marriage arrangement are acceptable is a folly of greatest magnitude. The Bible states the real picture in honest, plain language, quote, "Be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man sows, this he will also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh shall from the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit shall from the Spirit reap eternal life." End of quote, Galatians 6:7. Homosexuality is a sin, Leviticus 20:13. Adultery is a sin, Exodus 20 and verse 14. And whosoever commits the same destroys himself, Proverbs 6:32. Fornication is a sin, Galatians 5:19. Bestiality is a sin, Leviticus 20, verses 15 through 16. Rape is a sin, Deuteronomy 22, verses 25 through 27. Prostitution is a sin, 1 Corinthians 6, verses 15 through 18. Incest is a sin, 1 Corinthians 5. Those who persist in these sins shall not inherit the kingdom of God, 1 Corinthians 6, verses 9 and 10, and Galatians 5, verses 19 through 21. Second, the concept that one can break the commandments of God with impunity is also a folly of the highest order. No one has ever broken the commandments of God and escaped the guilt and consequences of his or her sin. The Bible records many instances of such by nations and individuals. Sodom was destroyed by the cataclysm of heavenly fire for its many sins, Genesis 19. Israel engaged in immorality in Moab and saw 24,000 swept away by a plague, Numbers 25, verses 1 through 9. David committed adultery and followed it with murder. He and Israel suffered many consequences as a result, 2 Samuel 12, verses 7 through 14. Amnon raped Tamar and was later murdered by Absalom, 2 Samuel 13. You might say that no one has ever broken God's commands. People simply break themselves on God's commands. All the commands are still here, centuries and millenniums after those who did their own thing lie in marked and unmarked tombs around the world. Third, the so-called momentary pleasures of these illicit sexual forays are offset by a lifelong sense of a lack of fulfillment. Who can measure the sorrow, heartache, and inner misery that wrenches the souls of the guilty? Who can relate the consequences suffered in every area of life? Those who are honest and bare their souls freely admit that the fear of disease haunts them continually. Such fear often turns them from being happy, open people to recluses who retire within themselves, hoping that no one will discover them. Others try to put on a front. They are the real people of society. But the camouflage is artificial. Those who are unmarried and have been promiscuous do not know what to do. If they tell a prospective marriage partner, they risk rejection. If they don't tell about their affairs, they always wonder if it will come out after the ceremony. Honesty is the bedrock foundation for a true marriage. Fourth, those who contract disease suffer far more and longer in the body for the illegal momentary gratification of the flesh. Disease knows no boundaries, attacking the single and the married. Fornicators get it. Adulterous mates can and do infect their unsuspecting wives and husbands. Guilt and consequences rage, and families are divided. Those who contract AIDS begin the slow death of the body, which houses the anguished soul. The gospel of Jesus Christ can cleanse the soul of a genuine believer who is born again of the water and the Spirit. Still, the body of death must claim its victim before the 70 years. Innumerable additional cases could be cited of human beings ravaged by fear, pain, sorrow, and death. The crass stupidity of sinful humans sanctioning and advocating, quote, safer sex, end of quote, is a paradox. How utterly incomprehensible is the great emphasis on eliminating smoking from commercial aircraft and public buildings, prohibition of nuclear waste and radiation, pollutions of air and water, and an all-out war on drugs, while simultaneously accelerating the foolish into sexual rack and ruin. How blind are those who will not see? The solution. Christians should do all in their power to repudiate the, quote, safe sex lie, end of quote. We must be lights in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, Philippians 2:15. Husbands and wives must hold marriage in high esteem before our observing youth. We must portray that which is beautiful, attractive, and pure. We must be models or examples who stand out in contrast to the sleazy, corrupt, and deviant behavior blatantly set forth in society and the media. Let us challenge our youth to become a generation of Josephs who do not succumb to the peer pressures of the pagan world, but who will stand in God's strength and the power of his might. May their number increase and become legion. Remember, you and God are a majority. As my father said many times, do something today you can rejoice about tomorrow. The only safe sex is the sex of God's arrangement. holy, pure, beautiful, the physical sexual bond between husband and wife. In that sexual relationship, there are emotional, intellectual, and moral components based upon the great spiritual foundation of Jesus Christ. This is the divine way. Safe sex, true sex, joyful sex, real sex. Experience Proverbs 5:18 through 19. Whether you have been married one day or 50 years. I also want to mention, in conjunction with this, we have an announcement in the bulletin for this issue that we have a new video series by Jimmy Hinton. This new series is an interesting background because Jimmy's father was a preacher who was also a pedophile and had numerous affairs during his time as a preacher. And this new series is about the problems of deviant sexual behavior and how even in the church we face that struggle. That will be available, and if you're interested in it, you can contact us. The Well From Which We Drink by Al Cornell. A while back, I worked with a young woman who had just graduated from the University of Wisconsin Wildlife Ecology Department. In driving to and between work sites, we had opportunities to discuss her atheism. I suspected she had developed that concept while at the university, but she informed me that she was an atheist before attending the University of Wisconsin at Madison. Though from a church membership family, other things had caused her to gravitate towards unbelief. However, she did reference friends who appeared to have constituted an atheist support group at the university. I reminded her that Alpo Leopold, the respected initiator of wildlife management as a college curriculum, had a section on the relationship of wildlife to morals and religion in his famous A Sand Country Almanac. Leopold taught at the University of Wisconsin-Madison from 1928 until his death in 1948. He started that section in the book by referencing a young man who was raised an atheist but changed his mind when he saw that, quote, there were 100-odd species of warblers, each bedecked like to the rainbow, and each performing yearly sundry thousands of miles of migration, end of quote. The Sand County Almanac remains a prominent place in the wildlife ecology curriculum. However, I wonder if that portion of the book has been mentioned since I did a presentation in Russell Labs and quoted a portion of it many years ago. Though this young woman had not become an atheist while at the university, she undoubtedly found a niche in which the atheist concept was frequently watered. I know from my college years that unbelieving professors sprinkle in comments to undermine faith. In fact, the brazen comments of one instructor motivated me to comment on faith when it seemed appropriate. Most youth will assume the well from which they drink is pure and life-sustaining. A majority will have determined their theological concept at least by the time they graduate from college, and they will never second-guess it. For many, it will be shallow, but never questioned. Of course, this does more than just help perpetuate atheism. Since a considerable portion of homeschooling curriculums teach young earth creationism, many youth end up believing that it is sound doctrine or even a salvation matter. They retain this view as adults. I have noticed that various blogs can get turned into sites where people vent about God and the Bible. It doesn't constitute a debate because the setting often dictates one-line answers that primarily just amount to a vote on the subject. People add their comments based on statements from their instructors, books, or friends without having considered the issue for themselves. The line used most frequently by atheists reads something like, quote, you've been duped by a bunch of ancient fairy tales, end of quote. I often wonder if that represents the totality of the poster's theology. Somebody told them, they repeated it, and that's all they need to know about existence or non-existence of God. What is annoying is that their posts often portray an intellectual aloofness. Of course, some have a grasp on why they are atheists, but others just parrot a catchy phrase to cast their vote. I'm impressed when I come across material that demonstrates that an unbeliever has some insight into Jesus' character. Many just jump on Richard Dawkins' bandwagon and relate all religion with war. They have failed to learn that with the advent of modern atheism, atheists have extended their share of atrocities. In contrast, the agnostic Lauren Isley, writing in the 1960s, spoke of a characteristic of Jesus Christ precisely as it is expressed in the four Gospels. He wrote, quote, that great impulse, love, compassion, call it what one will, which, however discounted in our time, moved the dying Christ on Golgotha with a power that has reached across 2,000 weary years. End of quote. In every age, there are those who twist Christianity to fit culture, social, and political agendas. Isley, unlike many, did not let those taint his vision of Christ. He must have read the Gospels for himself and caught a glimpse of Jesus. A bit of theology exceeds what Dawkins and his followers bothered to learn. They want to debase theology, but at the same time are determined to perpetuate their theological perception. The power of being able to change one's viewpoint beyond the concept that was adopted during youthfulness is exemplified in Anthony Flew. Flew, who had been a leading spokesman for atheism for decades, changed his viewpoint in his late years. His explanation for being able to do so was that he had always maintained a determination to go where the evidence led. The following quote from Francis Collins, who led the Human Genome Project, occurs on the front dust jacket of Flew's book, There Is a God. Flew's colleagues in the Church of Fundamentalist Atheists will be scandalized, end of quote. Of course, those colleagues resorted to comments about old age and senility. They were not willing to accept the idea that Flew could have changed his mind based on evidence. We all need to test the water we drink. We can't just send in a sample and have it tested. To do so would result in relying on someone else's values and biases to determine our own course of life. We must learn testing skills and apply them ourselves. Church folks need to hold several popular doctrines up to the light of God's Word and of scientific facts to grasp reasonable and spiritual concepts. Denying human-influenced global warming has no scriptural support. A proclamation that radioactive dating methods are bogus rings hollow in the mind of one trained in science. Resisting scientific evidence for continental drift, soil formation, glaciation, universe expansion, and dozens of other things adds to the concept that Christians have been drinking the wrong water. Biblical interpretations that oppose scientific discoveries undermine the foundation of Christianity's validity. Pure Christianity endorses the harmony of Scripture and creation. For each person who adopts Flew's principle of going where the evidence leads, life will become more intricate. It is much easier to determine just to stay on whatever path you were pointed toward at an early age in your life. If you're an atheist, read the Gospels not just from a perspective of trying to find fault, but attempt to harmonize the person you find there with your personal perception of reality. If you're a Christian, delve into some science field and harmonize your concept of reality with the physical universe of which we are a part. Fear no truth. Take time to develop a concept of the fundamental reason we exist. Hurrying to get your faith decisions may have undesirable consequences for you or those you influence. Scientist and God. There are skeptics in our world today who maintain that most scientists do not believe in God and try to convince the public that science and belief in God are opposed to each other. This column provides quotes from outstanding scientists of today and the past that reflect their belief in God and, in many cases, their faith in Jesus Christ. The science we are quoting this month is a professor of nuclear science and engineering at MIT. He designed, built, and operates the Alcator C-Mode Tokamak fusion device, and his name is Ian Hutchinson. Dr. Hutchinson said this, quote, "Today, Christian commitment informs, influences, and motivates the activities of many scientists. Among academics, scientists are, if anything, more likely to be Christians than non-scientists. At my university, MIT, I know dozens of Christian faculty members, and the number of Christians in its academic leadership is remarkable. The previous president was a Christian, and over the years I've noticed on many occasions how active Christian faculty are in running of the institute. Perhaps this is because, at its best, academic administration and committee service calls for a selfless effort to assist the achievement of others, a trait that does not come naturally to anyone, least of all ambitious academics. But that does come from Christian teaching, Philippians 2:3. Certainly in my own career, I've come to appreciate that scientific leadership calls for many skills that go far beyond the knowledge of scientific phenomena and the attached impersonal integration of nature that we learn in the classroom and at the lab bench. For me, Christian spiritual study and growth have been the most important source of those other vital skills. Finally, at church, we want our children to hear the gospel in a way that, with respect for both God's word and God's works, will not alienate them either from the church or from science. End of quote. That's taken from When God and Science Meet, published by the National Association of Evangelicals, pages 39 through 44. Cynthia's Corner. Cynthia Clayton writing, God's gift to us, marriage and family. God said after he created man, quote, it is not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. End of quote, Genesis 2:18. The statement is the foundation of marriage. It reflects the purpose of marriage, which is not to go through life alone, but to have a partner to help you. Genesis 1:28 says, quote, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. End of quote. Children are a blessing from God, and grandchildren are a crown for the aged. Proverbs 17:6. Marriage and families are God's design and plan to provide companionship, love, and support throughout the lives of humans. God is love, and he created us in his image, with the need to be loved and to love. He fulfills that need in his design for marriage and families. This family foundation is to be protected, honored, and lasting. That is why God in his word gives us many specific instructions and guidelines regarding how to do this. For instance, he tells us plainly that sex outside of marriage is sinful and wrong. Hebrews 13:4 says, quote, marriage is to be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept pure, end of quote. The quote, one flesh, end of quote, concept God mentions in Genesis 2:24 concerning marriage goes far beyond sexual relations. God intends for husbands and wives to be united until death. The relationship is designed to be the closest and deepest human bond that exists. But for that to become a reality, we must follow God's guidelines. He tells husbands and wives to respect one another. He tells husbands to love their wives and be considerate and not harsh with them. Wives are told to submit to and respect their husbands. Fathers should not embitter their children, and parents are instructed to discipline their children and bring them up to know and love God. Also, children are told to obey their parents. The scriptures regarding marriage and families are too numerous to list here. I can tell you from personal experience and life observations that if we reject God's guidelines, our marriages and families will suffer. God is a God of love, and he desires to bless us with love, companionship, joy, and security throughout our lifetime in family relationships by his design. Dandy Designs, ICE, the incredible tool of God. ICE is a critical blessing that we often take for granted. You probably even get angry with it if you live in a place where ice on the ground or roadway can be a threat to your travel safety. ICE is a very useful and vital item in the design of planet Earth. Ice stores water and allows some of our major rivers to exist. The Ganges, Indus, Kwang, Ho, and Yangtze rivers, plus all the Canadian rivers feeding Lake Winnipeg, get their water from ice stored in the winter and melted in the spring and summer. Some 80 cubic kilometers of meltwater feed the waters of Europe and the Middle East. Most of California gets its water in the same way. In Job 38:22, God challenges Job with, quote, have you entered the storehouses of the snow, end of quote. Stored snow is one of the tools God has used to provide for humans on a planet where shortage of water can be catastrophic. In addition to storing water, ice molds and shapes the surface of the earth and produces soil for agriculture. The odd shape of a water molecule, which is V-shaped, means that when water freezes, it will expand in volume instead of contracting, as you would expect. When ice forms, the geometry of the water molecule locks in the molecules so that the hydrogen-oxygen bond expands due to the geometry involved. The force of this expansion is enormous, enough to crack rocks and move boulders. When put under pressure, ice behaves as a fluid, and this is what allows glaciers to move. Glaciers are a major sculptor of many mountains and land surfaces, including most of North America. It is the design of the water molecule that allows us to enjoy the many benefits of ice. Great wisdom and intelligence is built into this seemingly minor part of our existence, which is an incredible tool of God. Another dandy design, the possum. Misunderstood marvel. Some have referred to possums as, quote, the Rodney Dangerfields of the animal kingdom, not getting any respect, end quote. The fact that they look like a rat and have a prehensile tail like a monkey contributes to that attitude. Like all of God's creatures, the possum is incredibly well designed to live successfully in a wide variety of ecosystems. Baby possums, like baby kangaroos, are called joeys. Possums have the shortest gestation period of any mammal, 12 days. Upon birth, the babies crawl through their mother's fur to a fur-lined pouch, where they nourish for roughly 100 days. Possums are immune to the sting of honeybees, scorpions, and rattlesnakes. They even eat rattlesnakes. Recent studies have shown that possums protect us from ticks. Possums are fastidious in their grooming, scratching, licking, and chewing to remove any tick that is in their fur. Recent studies have shown that a possum may kill as many as 4,000 ticks a week, reducing a chance of Lyme disease being spread. Possums do better than rats, cats, rabbits, and dogs in intelligence tests. They are rarely aggressive and eat nearly anything. Because they originated in the tropics, they can't stand cold for long periods of time. That means they frequently invade human-occupied areas looking for warmth in the winter. Most of us know that playing possum is a favorite survival skill possums possess. When faced with a threat, the possum will keel over and look dead. They also defecate and exude a noxious, oily green slime from their anal glands. This is not a conscious activity of possums, but happens involuntarily. Recently, scientists have found a peptide in possum blood called lethal toxin neutralizing factor. This peptide works by bonding to a toxic protein in the venom of a snake, scorpion, or even some toxic plants. Claire Kamives, who has written on the amazing ability of the possum, says the peptide works so well against all natural poisons that it's, quote, like a miracle. God's design of all life is a miracle, but the lowly possum may be the most misunderstood and least appreciated of all of God's creatures. News and notes. Religious freedom on campus evaporating. One expected result of the Supreme Court ruling that same-sex couples could marry is that zealous officials would use the decision to silence opinions of those who didn't agree. This is showing up at colleges and universities in massive numbers. The Alliance Defending Freedom is distributing written cases of students and professors who have been persecuted for speaking about their convictions on same-sex marriage. A few examples are, one, Julia Ward, who was expelled from Eastern Michigan University's counseling program. Two, Emily Broker, who was called before the ethics committee and threatened with having her diploma withheld at Missouri State University. Three, Jonathan Lopez, who was verbally assaulted in front of other students and labeled a fascist because he quoted two Bible verses in explaining the biblical view of marriage. Four, a conservative newspaper at Oregon State University, which had copies of their paper confiscated and trashed by the university. Five, the University of Florida, which refused to recognize the Christian fraternity Beta Upsilon Chi because they limited membership to Christian men. If you're interested in this area, let me suggest you go to adflegal.org or call 800-835-5233. A four-legged snake. One of the most interesting descriptions in the Bible is the explanation that snakes at one time had legs and lost them as a visual picture of Satan's role in the curse. Whatever view a person takes of that account, in Discover Magazine, January-February 2015, page 91, there is an article about the discovery of a fossil snake, which has four legs. The back legs are larger than the front legs, but the rest of the anatomy is similar to modern snakes. Nigeria exports Christianity. I recently had a prisoner in Texas tell me that Nigerian Christians had been imported to assist in some areas of the prison in which he was incarcerated. I then came upon an article in Christian Science Monitor Weekly, September 28, 2015, page 21, which talked about Nigerian Christians now numbering about 100 million living in other countries and serving in a variety of ways in those countries, but bringing an evangelistic thrust in the places that they work. The services these folks give to the countries where they work are vastly superior to the government services. Tupe Okola, one of the workers in the Pentecostal church, says, quote, "Traditionally, churches came from the Western world, but now we are returning the kingdom back to them," end of quote. Much of the popularity of the Nigerian churches is because they are bringing a prosperity gospel to people who are destitute, and the message is materialistic in nature. Getting the concept of restoring the church, as it was in the first century, with emphasis on the spiritual riches, is also happening. The fields are really, truly ripe unto harvest. Big numbers and life in space. In 1950, the famous Italian physicist Enrico Fermi raised what has been called the Fermi paradox. He said, quote, "If the universe contains life, then where is it? Why hasn't life shown up at our doorstep?" End of quote. Recent calculations show that there are 100 billion galaxies, and some of them, like our Milky Way, have as many as 400 billion stars. Our latest measurements show that roughly 3/4 of the stars have planets, which would suggest that there are approximately 10 to the 23rd planetary systems. That would be 8,000 billion billion. Are we the only planet with life? There are two potential mistakes here. One is the religious fundamentalist error of saying, quote, "Yes, we are alone because the Bible says so," end of quote. The fact is, the Bible doesn't say so. It is silent on this question. The other error is the person who tries to say that if the numbers are great enough, it will happen. That is like saying if you draw a card from a deck, the chances of it being the ace of spades is 1 out of 52. But if you draw 52 times, on the average, it will happen. The problem here is an ignorance of how many factors have to be right for life to happen. The media presents the idea that if you're in the, quote, Goldilocks zone, that's in other words, the distance from a star where water can exist as a liquid, that life will be there. But there are a multitude of other factors that have to be present for life, especially higher forms of life, to exist. God may have created life elsewhere, so don't throw your Bibles away if it is discovered, but don't be surprised if it never happens. The data for this discussion is from Astronomy Magazine, January 2016, page 6. Big dollars producing showy creationist structures. A change that has taken place in apologetics in the 48 years we have been involved in it has been the influx of money that denominations have brought to creationist projects. Ken Ham has been able to lead the way with his $17 million Creation Museum in Kentucky, and he is now well into another project to build a replica of Noah's Ark. A group called Mount Blanco has started a fossil museum in Crosbyton, Texas. Answers in Genesis and Creation Ministries International sponsored a trip to Mount Ararat to find Noah's Ark. After spending a lot of money and a lot of time, the folks involved in that expedition have given up. AIG and CMI agreed that going to Ararat is a waste of time. The Institute for Creation Research is now in a fundraising effort to build a $22 million Dallas Museum of Science and Earth History. You can see the elaborate plans on icr.org/museum. We share the concerns of these ministries, but because of the denominational teachings built into these projects, we are pessimistic about the potential for them to make a difference. They might even increase the attacks on Christianity by atheists and skeptics. Think what can be done educationally if that amount of money could be directed into accurately presenting what the Bible says and showing all of the scientific evidence that supports it. The fruit of pluralism. The politically correct view of religious issues in our day is to believe that all roads lead to the same God. The logical problem with this view is that it assumes that all religions are equally valid. My atheist friends would say that since there is no God, pluralism is true because all beliefs lead to the realization that there is no God. That doesn't answer the evidence for God's existence that we present in each issue of this journal. It has also allowed the world to get into a quagmire of radical Islam. Pluralism has to believe that all religions are equally valid, and that simply is not the case. The Week News magazine said it well, quote, "The unfortunate reality is that the Quran's 7th century text provides ample support for the belief that armed jihad against unbelievers is the duty of all Muslims," end of quote, November 27, 2015, page 6. It can be equally well said that the Ku Klux Klan does not represent the beliefs of all Christians, but the difference is that Everything the Klan stood for opposed what Jesus taught. That is not true of Muhammad and the Quran. We urge everyone to compare the teachings of Jesus and the Gospels, especially the Sermon on the Mount, with the teachings of Muhammad. There are many good, peaceful, kind, nonviolent Muslims in the world, but the book they live by is not a book of peace. Pluralism will continue the wars and terror that we have seen in the past year. Another military UFO. Just when you think the whole UFO thing has been laid to rest, another one shows up. This time it was a mid-November with a blazing light flashing over the skies of California. The singer Josh Groban got things rolling in style by tweeting, "Did anyone else see that?" It turned out the Navy had just launched an unarmed Trident II D-5 missile from a Navy submarine. But the project was top secret, so no one knew it was coming. The rocket went over San Francisco, but was seen as far away as Arizona. There are no UFO sightings that don't have a probable explanation, and some have been verified as human-caused or the product of meteors. People are still looking for a way to get out of this life alive, and an alien abduction still appeals to some people. The reference for this is The Week, November 20th, 2015, page 7. Lesbian mayor pushes her agenda. Anise Parker, the openly lesbian mayor of Houston, Texas, enacted a measure called the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance. The big issue was allowing any restroom to be used by any gender. Business owners who didn't allow men and women's restrooms would be fined $500 a day. When ministers in Houston resisted the ordinance, they were ordered to turn over all text messages, phone calls, communications with parishioners, speeches, presentations, or sermons to the mayor. All of this resulted in petitions and threats of court challenges. The Texas Attorney General referred to the ordinance as, quote, a direct assault on the religious liberty guaranteed by the First Amendment, end of quote. On November the 3rd, 2015, an ordinance was rejected by a citywide referendum vote. Parker was replaced as mayor by Sylvester Turner on January the 2nd. In his campaign, he vowed to reenact HERO. We can expect to see more of this in the future. For background on this continuing story, see Citizens Magazine, November 2015, pages 12 through 16. Is Bible a dirty word? In the September-October 2015 issue of Biblical Archaeological Review, page 6, there is an interesting article by Dr. Herschel Shanks. In the article, Dr. Shanks tells of a change in archaeology that involves removing the word Biblical, or Bible, from any academic writing in the Middle East. Shanks points out that the American School of Oriental Research has just changed the name of its popular magazine, Biblical Archaeologist, to Near Eastern Archaeology. They did that because it was the only way they could get articles about archaeological projects being conducted in Arab countries. Oxford University Press has changed the name of its new archaeological encyclopedia from the Oxford Encyclopedia of Biblical Archaeology to the Oxford Encyclopedia of Archaeology in the Near East, to enable the editors to obtain entries about archaeology in Arab countries. Jordanian authorities just changed a sign at the Tali Hizban, taking the word Biblical out of the title. Perhaps we can understand the motivation for all this. Freedom of speech in academia apparently doesn't include certain words, depending upon your prejudice or where in the world you live. Atheist Sign Campaign. American Atheist has just started a campaign in which billboards have been erected in North Carolina and Colorado saying, quote, "Go ahead and skip church, just be good for goodness sake," end of quote. The fact remains that there is no compelling reason to be good if you can get great pleasure out of not being good, and you have no one to answer to. The data is from the Associated Press release of December 24, 2015. British government bans crosses and prayers. The European Court of Human Rights has agreed to hear a challenge by two women who were prohibited by a British government from wearing crosses to work. The British government also stopped the town of Bideford from opening its public meetings with a prayer. Interestingly, Queen Elizabeth rebuked the government on the prayer issue. The date is from Christianity Today, May 2012, page 10. Space is flat. One of the big questions in cosmology over the past 100 years has to do with the shape of space. Is space flat like a sheet of paper, or is it round like a sphere? If space is curved, and if you go far enough in one direction, would you end up where you started? If it is flat, that will not happen. The implications of this are enormous for cosmological theories. Many theories would have to be discarded if space is flat, because matter would never return to its original position in space. As astronomical measuring devices have gotten more precise, the answer seems to be, without doubt, that space is flat. Dr. Martin White in Astronomy Magazine for June 2015, page 44, says, quote, "We find that space is flat to the limits of our capacity to measure it," end of quote. Once again, the biblical statement that there was a beginning and that there will be an end fits the data very well. Comet isn't just rock and water. In the past 2 years, a lot of attention has been given to comets. This includes the close observation of a comet and an actual landing on another comet. Close analysis of a comet that passed through the solar system in 2015 revealed that there are some alcohols and sugars in some comets. The comet has been nicknamed the Happy Hour Comet because it contains these organic compounds. Unfortunately, it won't be back in this part of the solar system for 8,000 years. But what it shows us is that fragments of the compounds that make up life on this Earth exist on other astronomical bodies. Organic compounds are not confined to planet Earth. Reference for this is Time Magazine, November 15, 2015, page 10. The origin of water on Earth mystery grows. There has been much research to answer the question of how Earth got all of its water. A favorite theory has been that water came from comets early in the Earth's history. The problem with that theory is that all the evidence seems to be against it. Deuterium, a heavy isotope of hydrogen, is found in smaller amounts in comets and dust particles in space, 122 parts per million if you're interested, while it is found on oceans of the Earth in high amounts, 156 parts per million. There is water trapped in molten rocks and volcanoes, and its amount of deuterium is much closer to the level found in Earth's water. It appears that water was in the mind of the Creator as the materials producing the Earth were formed. That is no surprise when you realize the importance of water in allowing life to exist. Reference for that is Science News, December 12, 2015, page 12. And that is the end of News and Notes and the completion of the reading of the Does God Exist bi-monthly journal for the visually impaired for March-April 2016. We hope that you have enjoyed the articles, and we look forward to being back with you with the May-June issue in 2 months. This is John Clayton, thanking you for listening, and hoping you have a really good day.